Today on the show, we are talking about using your emotions as a source of information for making financial planning decisions. That's coming up on the show next.
From the streets of San Antonio, straight to your wallet, it's Jake's 2 cents on Jake of All Trades.
All right, welcome back. My name is Kirk, and I'm not a financial expert.
And I'm Jake Rivas. I am the financial expert. But together, Kirk and I talk about financial planning topics, we review the economy, and look at financial articles, all with the express purpose of helping our listeners build wealth, both today and into the future.
And in order to build wealth, you have to get emotional. You gotta use all your emotions to get wealthy, right? That's what wealthy people... No, but we're going to talk about today emotions and how they can be useful in making financial decisions. And there's a mistaken idea that whenever you're in the realm of finances or in the realm of business, you shut off your emotional valve. You don't think or you don't feel, you don't have those kinds of experiences. It's all about, you know, you leave those at the door, leave your feelings at the door. And that's it. And that is actually really a bad view of things. And it's a really mistaken thing. Because one thing I just wanted to start off with is, you know, I'm very, as you know, I'm actually very pro billionaire, right? And I've read, we've had this debate, and I've read biographies of people like Bezos and Musk and Steve Jobs and Rockefeller and, you know, Edison. And they, I think we may sometimes think of them, if we don't read about them, as kind of unemotional. Like Musk seems that way, or Zuckerberg seems like they're on the spectrum or something like that, and they're not emotional. But if you actually read their stories, same thing with Jobs and all these guys, Rockefeller, they are highly passionate people. They just happen to be focused in one area often. But Bill Gates was super passionate, and he was, you know, so he used his emotions all the time as business decisions. Same thing with Steve Jobs. Like when he felt something was off in terms of the look of it, he would have reasons for it, but he used his emotions as kind of tools. So I just think there's a view that, like, in the world of business and finance, no emotions, you're just a robot. And, you know, when you're at home with your wife and your husband and your kids and you're at a bar with your friends, then you could have your emotions.
That's the time, right? That's the time for emotions.
Yeah, but that's not true.
Not when we're talking about money and we're making financial decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, you're exactly right. That you couldn't be more off base if that's your mindset when you are making financial decisions. And so the reality is that the more you discount emotions, the less pleased you're going to be with the outcome, right? Because now my emphasis or my focus has been placed on a numerical data point, right? What's the rate of return on my investment? Well, approach it differently, right? What's the rate of return necessary for me to send my kid to college, right? Mm. That's a different way to incorporate feelings and emotions about a situation and what you're trying to achieve, rather than just objectively evaluating an investment decision or, you know, a financial recommendation from a very narrow focus of a return on investment. People like to talk about that a lot. Return on investment. Well, what's the return? What am I going to get out of this? And so I thought this was an interesting topic to bring to light for people to understand just how important emotions can play in financial planning decision making, because that's where you have the most successful outcomes for a financial plan.
Yeah. And so this idea came from a newsletter you got, and I thought the premise or the intro that this individual brings up, I believe her name is Sarah Newcomb. And she brings up a really good example that I thought you could talk about, which is when she was chastised by her community of people within the financial world or people who are clients or, you know, and she's a financial professional. And she announced on social media that she had refinanced her home from a 30 to a 15 year mortgage. And then she goes on and says, given the low interest rates for lending and the opportunity for growth in the stock market, I was clearly wrong, according to them, to prioritize putting my money toward my debt rather than toward growth. So explain first what she did.
Yeah.
Why it seems with the, why the outside people were mad at her for making that assessment, and then why she was right to make that assessment in, or that decision in the end. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yep. So the first thing is what she was doing is taking the loan that was on her house, the mortgage, refinancing it. And rather than refinancing it into a new 30-year term, she shortened the term to a 15-year mortgage. So what associates with that is your payment is going to go up mm-hmm. because the amount of debt you just financed has a shorter repayment schedule. So that just means your payments are going to be higher because you're going to pay it off faster. That also means that she's potentially loses some cash flow every month that could be directed into her own pocket for saving and investing, right? So if my mortgage was before the refinance was $3,000 a month, I refinance and I shorten the repayment period to 15 years and it goes up to $4,000 a month. That's $1,000 less I have every month to save and invest for other goals.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. And so her critics, that's what she did. And then the critics come out and say, why would you do that? We're in this environment where interest rates are almost at zero. So borrowing for 30 years at almost, you know, 2 or 3% is basically free money. Why would you shorten that borrowing window, thereby increasing your out-of-pocket cost on a monthly basis when you could be taking advantage of these lower rates? It doesn't make financial sense.
Okay. So now why did that makes a lot of sense. So basically, she, you know, paying it off with 15 years, she had more to pay, which means she had less money to invest in the stock mm-hmm. market. So the way she put it is that she put more money into toward her debt rather than toward a growth, you know, of an investment, things like that.
Yeah.
Now she goes on and says that the reader that those people who were chastising her were making a, she said a good financial argument. But it was off base. Now, I think it's not a good financial argument in a sense because it's, although she goes on to say this though, but because it's not advocating for what is best for her decisions and her emotions and what she really wants. And now, so can you explain why, like her desire to pay down mm-hmm. the debt, you know, she says for emotional and psychological reasons that outweighed the increased ROI. Can you explain what she was talking about there?
Yeah, this is where the art of financial planning really is illustrated beautifully and where the importance of good financial planning is illustrated as well. So the point she's making is that yes, from a financial, purely financial perspective, it makes more sense to borrow somebody, use somebody else's money at a much lower interest rate for a longer period of time mm-hmm. for me to have more money in my pocket today to do something with. Purely financially, that does technically make sense. But what they are discounting and what she illustrates is the value she placed on the emotional and psychological reasons for wanting to eliminate that mortgage debt far outweighed what the current circumstances presented, which was low interest rates and favorable lending terms. So that's where you have this decision to make. And as a human, that's that human element that we bring into financial planning, which makes it so beneficial for people and why it's so necessary for people to go through as a process. Because you're taking out the strictly objective money perspective and introducing a human element that now weighs, what do I need for my life and what are my goals? Regardless of what it means for money or whether or not it makes sense, you know, long term from a purely financial perspective, what is it that I'm trying to achieve? And so she decided consciously that the emotion tied to having that debt and not being able to pay it off within her lifetime was far more important to her than trying to take advantage of low interest rates and, you know, not paying off her debt completely.
So basically when she says she paid down the debt for emotional and psychological reasons, like if we were to make this manifest this like in just as an example, it could be something like it's anxiety ridden to think of, or it may give you anxieties to think that if you're 50, you have a 30-year mortgage, right? Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, like there's a joke from The Office, again, when Michael Scott buys a condo, and he gets like a 30-year mortgage. And do you know that what I'm talking about? Have you seen this episode?
I've seen this one.
It's early on. You're going to have to watch The Office just so you can get all my references.
I am.
So Dwight, the assistant, eventually says, wow, at your age, you're basically buying a coffin. And so you're getting like, and if I want a coffin, I'd make sure it had better walls than this or something like that. But it basically was this psychological, then he started freaking out before he signed it. It's like, wow, I didn't think, you know, it's like this 30-year thing. And so when she says, you know, emotional and psychological reasons that she wanted 15 years, because that's like a breathable thing. I mean, we did a talk or an episode months ago about the 7-year auto loan. Is only like mm-hmm. twice. So you could get a car for 7 years, you know, yeah. And this is only twice that basically. And it's like, oh, it's not that bad. It's not. So that can be very relieving in a lot of ways, even though you're not making as much money long-term that you could, right?
Right.
Because obviously yeah. she could take that, if it was like $1,000 more a month, she could take that $1,000 and invest it in something, which some yeah. people would choose to do. Like I would probably choose to do that route.
Right.
Because I don't have the anxieties of the 30 year.
Right. And that's a perfect illustration too, right there is, let's fast forward for this scenario, right? For her, If indeed it's the let's assume that maybe she grew up in a household where debt was always a problem and it was always a source of friction for her family, okay? And that bias has now sort of permeated into her adulthood and into her decision making. Well, if she decided instead of doing what she did and she decided to go the route that all of her critics say she should have taken, which is take out the 30-year mortgage and then start parking money into an investment account, let's fast forward 10 years from now, right? 10 years from now, she'll be 10 years into a 30-year mortgage, and she might have $50,000 in an investment account, right? From a purely financial perspective, she's in very good shape. But from an emotional or mental perspective, she's 10 years further into age, right? 10 years older, mm-hmm. and she still has no sort of horizon to see this ever being paid off. And so for her,
she's
20
years
away. Yeah, she's still 20 years
out. So she could be like 60 now and there's still 20 more years to go.
Yeah. She may have some investments, but in her mind, that those investments pay off that debt.
Yeah.
Right. There's never a source of value attributed to that portfolio. Whereas in your situation, just like you said, I would probably take the other route because there's a value that you, whether consciously or unconsciously, you are recognizing there's a value in accumulation of wealth over leveraging or holding on to some amount of debt.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why it's helpful to have a person that you talk to about these decisions, because you might, for instance, force yourself to take the more quote unquote objective financial decision and then be miserable and freaked mm-hmm. out like lots of times throughout your life. Yeah. And then you have to push it aside. And that's not healthy. That's not good for you. And, you know, you're going to be stressed when you don't need to be stressed. Like it's better, you know, how much money is stress worth? I mean, that's
exactly, you know, that's a very difficult question to ask yourself. Yeah. Because you need to figure out what the stressor is. And sometimes, especially when it comes to financial planning or dealing with financial planning aspects, we can unintentionally associate stress with the fact that either we don't have enough money or we just have to make decisions about money. But really, with the help of a financial planner, you can get down to the root of what the actual stressor is. In this mm-hmm. example, right, it's actually carrying too much debt. It has nothing to do with ability to save $500,000 or contributing to your 401k. It's the fact that my lifestyle is such that I need to have little to no debt because that gives me a lot of emotional value. And that cannot be discounted. There's no amount of money that should discount or you should sacrifice those emotional aspects for. And that's something too, on this article, and we'll put a link to this article. It's on Investment News where they talked about this. They have this really great sentence here about financial planning. And it says, the goal of financial planning is to maximize the client's quality of life while keeping them within the constraints of their limited resources. So think about that quality of life piece. That's why you plan. That's why people have planners, because then their quality of life is increased because now they've gone through a process of understanding and clarity, and now they have a direction they want to go to. The other thing I think that's really great in this article, at the very end, they talk about not wasting information. And information in this context is not like that article I read on CNBC or that tidbit of information I heard from Morningstar. They're talking about emotional information, emotions as information. So when you start to feel emotions about a certain conversation, right? Oh, I'm getting a little anxious about putting that much into my retirement account. I know I should do it just because compound interest says that that's the right approach, but I really need to do something else with it. Don't discount that feeling, right? It may still be that the long-term, boring financial planning recommendation of investing for the future is the right approach, but you got there yourself. You didn't just make that decision based strictly on information, financial information you were evaluating.
Yeah. So the idea emotions are information is kind of what I was hinting at with the billionaires and the business examples is that sometimes, you know, so like what they say in business is it was a gut decision, right? Which is the same thing as saying it was an emotional decision, really. Mm-hmm. It's just a different way of saying it. You know, the ancients thought that your emotions come from your gut or something, right? And that's, a really important thing to just a life lesson more than just financial.
Absolutely. Right?
Like you were saying, if there's a conversation that you're dreading, you shouldn't like ignore the dread part of it and just like swallow your whatever and just go do the, like, just, I got to go do this. I'm going to go do it and get it over with. And then you do that. You should confront and think about the dread and why you dread having this conversation with your spouse, for instance.
Absolutely.
And that's a big one is, you know, we're going to have a conversation about scaling back for a while. I don't want to have this conversation because we never have financial conversations. And that's, and maybe that's what you'll learn is that this is something you can't avoid and you need to, you know, start having that conversation now. Or as we've talked about in other shows, the number one reason for divorce is financial reasons.
Yep.
And so, you know, the point is that, you know, what you're saying that I think is really important is these emotions you feel, they're not right necessarily. You may need to learn to go around them. Just because you feel something doesn't mean you should do it. I feel like buying a house that's way out of my budget. No, that's not a good idea.
And that's
just
not
because
what we're
you
saying.
Feel like it. Yeah, that's not what we're saying, but we're saying that you should acknowledge and understand the feeling and why you feel that. So if you do want this house, you should ask yourself, well, how do I get there? Because I need to make sure reality matches that. I didn't think that I wanted a house this big with the big old pool and all that stuff, but that's going to cost a whole nother level of, you know, existence, right?
And right.
So the point is that you should consider your emotions. They are information, and they're information about you. And that they're not information that you should necessarily always act on. But they do tell you something about how you view the world, whether you know, you may not even know it consciously. And that's what emotions really can help you with.
Well said. And don't discount the role that emotions play when you're talking about and dealing with your money, because it's arguably way more important than which stock you're picking or which fund you're investing in or which insurance coverage you're selecting. The emotions typically are the initial point of discussion that then translates into the strategy, the technique, the investment, whatever it may be.
Yep. That's a good way of putting it.
Good stuff. So emotions are information. That's what we have for you.
Now, did you want to really quickly talk about any of these little tips they had? Like the maximizing value thing?
Oh yeah. So, well, we kind of covered these, but they gave these three sort of data points on,
I thought maybe it's good to sum up as a conclusion.
Right? Yeah.
Like these are cause they put them in emotion or maximizing value, emotional utility, and don't waste information. So I guess we talked about those three things, but that's, you know, we could sum it up in those.
Right. So and the example here is like maximizing value doesn't exclusively mean that if I'm looking at two equations and option A makes me more money than option B, I should automatically choose option A. Well, that's only a dollar value maximization. But what we're trying to say is don't automatically assume option A is the best choice just because it exclusively makes you more money. That's the maximizing value.
So she calls that maximizing value. Mm-hmm. Now, I found the emotional utility one the most interesting one. Now, that's the whole point of what we were just talking about, of course. But
right. Yeah. But
I like it in utility. That says utility.
Yeah, utility. Which they acknowledge is kind of a catch-all term for value generated from a decision you make, right? But the financial outcomes of a decision are part of the utility we experience. And that's that equating value to an experience. And that's also where you talked about earlier, just in general, life decision-making can be a lot more beneficial for you when the utility associated with whatever you're valuing is tied to your emotions rather than some artificial goal or a numeric thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I like that. And then don't waste information is the third one, which that's just, again, the idea that emotions are information and you should use it as a starting point, basically.
Yeah. I like to use this too. Like, there's an example. So when I'm in the data gathering process for a new client and we're collecting all of their data, their income information, their assets, their liabilities, all those numbers, right?
Yeah.
The other component of that data gathering process is about understanding their emotional biases, how they make money around decisions and what they're planning for. And that's arguably the more important part of that data gathering. So that just right there tells you that I can't even do my job effectively if somebody just turns over all of their resources to me without giving me insight into who they are, how they make decisions, and what they're trying to achieve. With both of those bits of information, now we have a fully formed financial plan and a strategy moving forward. Leaving one or the other out, because they're equal in this instance, will result in the failure of or the inability to accomplish a specific goal because we haven't set the priorities correctly using all the information that's available.
Okay. So I think that's good. So just remember when you're making these decisions, think maximizing value, think emotional utility, and not wasting any of the information. So all the financial information and any emotional information and context you can provide and understand will help you make the best decisions.
Bingo. Love it. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Jake of All Trades. Be sure to check us out on social media by searching for @Jake's2Cents. Check out the blog at jakes2cents.com. Take care. We'll see you next time.
Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Fixed insurance products and services offered through CES Insurance Agency. Actual performance and results will vary. These interviews do not constitute a recommendation as to the suitability of any investment for any person or persons having circumstances similar to those portrayed. Consult a financial advisor regarding your specific circumstances.